complex.
DPS. Go. Go. PUS. Go. Surgeon. Go. Booster. Go. Copy that. We have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Gonzalez and Brett Van. We'll be talking with him today about not only the creation of this song, Beautifully Alive, the title track for the amazing album Beautifully Alive that came out a few years ago, but also his creative process, what he's all about, what his inspirations are, what kind of gear he's using in the studio, all that good nerdy stuff as we talk about the new tracking process for his upcoming album, La Renovación de Moi. Welcome to the show, Danny Gonzalez. How are you doing today?
I am wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Chris. It's an absolute pleasure.
I would have to say the exact same thing. It has been such a great time over the last couple few months to reconnect with you. We used to hang out together, work together on things many, many years ago. And to have you on this show right now is really a big full circle moment for me. We did a lot of experimentation back in the day, a lot of playing around with stuff, and to hear where you have come with your musical process, with your inspiration, and with your art is fantastic. And to know that you're still out there, you're still doing it, to me is probably one of the most inspirational and happy moments of my life. Because so frequently as an engineer, as a musician, you work with people, you do things with people, you part ways, you go down different paths. And then whenever you reunite, what, almost 20 years later now, you find out that people aren't necessarily doing their art anymore. You know, like, yeah, I pick up the guitar every once in a while, you know, play a song for the kids. But I don't really write anymore. I don't really do that kind of stuff. And to see that there are musicians like you out there that 20 years down the road are still making their art, still plying their trade, that to me is literally the inspiration that's necessary for so many people out there. So let's start kind of cracking the nut, getting into a little bit of Brett Van to begin with, the organization behind it, what brought you to start creating the music, and what really brought you into music in the first place, Danny?
Certainly. So, you know, I came from a family of musicians. My dad is a musician. My mother's a singer. And as a kid, I was just constantly surrounded and, you know, audio bombardment from my parents. You know, my dad was either playing a lick on the guitar or my mother was singing. Mm-hmm. And pretty early in my life, my father recognized this and just put me behind some drums. And I kind of took to him like, you know, fish to water. And that's kind of where my journey started. And been doing it ever since. And I'd say probably the pivotal point in my life where it became more of a focal point is after I got out of the military, I got hurt in the service in the line of duty. And, you know, I thought, what's next? You know, I had no idea what I was going to do or where I was going to go, but I knew that I was good at this one thing, you know? So I really just started doing as much personal therapy with music as I could, if you will, to kind of get myself rehabilitated. And having spent so much time by myself with a guitar, with a pen and paper, you know, I realized that there was more to the art of it than just, you know, getting out there and playing in front of a bunch of people. Nobody really realizes the art and the craft, if you will, behind the scenes and behind the music, you know.
Yeah, I think I really think that that is a very poignant fact to point out, is that there really is an entire craft to studio work in and of itself, to going out, recording, getting this stuff, creating the album. And so many times we get caught up with, like you're saying, like what we see on stage and expecting to see people on stage. Breath Band, I think, is a fantastic example of creator being able to run amok in the most proper way possible. And by that, I mean, in the truest sense of creator, there is a track on the album Beautifully Alive that was not laid by you, Danny?
No, actually, I did the entire album myself.
Yeah.
Aside from the engineering, of course, you know, sure. I did the drums, the bass, the guitars, all the vocals. And interestingly enough, it was a very hard and arduous process. But, you know, kind of the inspiration behind it, to be honest with you, comes from, I would say, three pivotal points. You know, I remember back in the day when we were making music and you had told me, you said, you know, I really think that you can do anything musically if you just open yourself up to the cosmos and let it be. And that was one spark for me. The second spark was, I remember being a kid and buying Pretty Hate Machine by Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
And realizing years later that all of this music came from one guy's craziness.
Yeah.
You know? And then the third one was seeing personally Lenny Kravitz record all the parts to one of his albums. And, you know, I think wonderful things about him, but I remember thinking, I can play drums better than that dude, you know? And so when it came about that I had all this material and no band, I went, well, I can either sit around waiting to find people, which, as you know, is almost impossible.
Yeah.
Or I can just fail miserably and do it myself. And really, ironically enough, I had a wonderful engineer named Jonathan Sambrick. He owns a studio in Pennsylvania called Thornwall Studios. This guy told me, he goes, look, we're either going to do a really good job or it's going to be terrible and you'll just have spent a whole bunch of money on garbage. He goes, sure. But really, what do you have to lose? And, you know, so those, all those factors, you know, Trent Reznor, Lenny Kravitz, and then Jonathan in my ear, I decided I can either live the rest of my life like everybody else and hate going to a job, you know, hate dealing with people that I don't want to deal with and making money for people that are going to spend it on a lot of nonsense.
Yeah.
I can just try, you know, and I did. And fortunately it turned out okay. So.
Yeah. Well, I, it turned out amazingly well. The seven track album, Beautifully Alive, whenever you sent it to me a few months ago after we reconnected, it was like, wow. Because I remember your band Fail back in the day. I tell people all the time, you know, like, I remember you paid me like $25 or something that night to come out and set up your drum kit and stuff whenever y'all opened up for Two Live Crew. And that was like my quote, first paid gig, you know, that I tell people all the time, like, hey, yeah, it was just a buddy asking me to come play Rockstar so he could play Rockstar and not have to set up his own drum kit by himself, you know.
Yeah.
Quick changeover, come help me out. But to see that progression, and to see that progression with you as a musician from then to now, is 180 degrees, man. Not that you were not talented, skilled in drumming and doing what you were doing, but to have seen you reach out and really reach within yourself to pull out these other aspects that were there, guitar, bass, vocals, lyrics. It really is great to see a musician stretch their legs and really pull themselves out of what is a true comfort zone to create something. What is your process once you, because you're in the middle of polishing tracks and finishing things up right now for La Renovation de Moi. And I just love hearing and geeking out with people about their process. And to know that, like the other day when we were talking privately, you were telling me that you literally got to the point that you just had to pay somebody. You realized that you were your own worst enemy, that if you were allowed to be behind the console, content would never get out.
I would agree with that. You know, interestingly enough, you know, I am finishing up my second album and my process has grown, you know, as the second album has grown. But I want to kind of touch base on what you just said, because it's really important. I think as a musician, you know, I probably have 4 hours worth of material that has never materialized.
Sure.
And part of that is because I used to own my own studio and I used to sit there for hours trying to tweak the guitar for one, you know, track that I just choked it to death. And one day I realized I can either have, you know, 10 seconds of material in these vaults, or I can just get out of my own way and pay a really good engineer to track me, go in, be the musician, and then walk away. And I don't know what made me think of that. I just knew that I was my worst enemy and I needed to move out of the way. So I did. And it's actually pretty relieving, you know, because the process for me now is it all starts with a guitar.
Yeah.
Ironic that I start with a guitar because I'm a drummer, but, you know, I start with a guitar and I start with an idea. And I say this with absolute respect. I don't really write the music. You know, I sit around and these really wonderful riffs come about and I don't profess to own them. You know, it's me being present and, you know, I really believe the cosmos just kind of hand down these little gifts to me that I inherently kind of mishmash together to get a song.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that as a musician, it's my job to be open to whatever's kind of swirling around up there and not profess any of it to be my own. So that's the first process, you know, is just being open as a conduit for this art. And then once I have received said art, if you will, then I start crafting it. You know, I pull out my Moleskine notebook and my iPad, and I do a lot of, you know, recording of myself visually so that I can remember whatever the heck I'm playing. And then I just kind of piece all this stuff together. And it's always guitar and bass that are done before I get to the studio. But the studio is for, you know, me as a drummer to kind of be a drummer. You know, I don't have anything planned before I go into the studio. I let the music kind of dictate how I'm going to drum. I let the music dictate the mood that I'm in, you know, and the lyrics that I write. I never show up with lyrics, because I learned from the first album, when I do and I go to sing them in the booth, they don't fit, you know, and then it's another travesty and I'm pissed off and that spurs new lyrics. And then those angry lyrics end up being, you know, the one that makes on the record. So, you know, I've kind of learned what works for me and what doesn't. And, you know, anybody who's considering, you know, recording and taking their craft seriously, You know, I, with an ego, as any man has, thought beforehand, I knew what I was doing.
Mm.
And that's just not the case. The more time you spend in the studio, the more you realize you don't know, and the more humble you become. And I think once you sit in that humble seat, that's when you become better.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, this process, and I'm going to name drop for a second because I think it's pretty important. I've been recording in the same studio that the Deftones were in, and they just released their new album, yep. Ohms, which is amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And being around those guys who are just absolute veterans and just humble and telling me what works for them and just telling me, here's what we do, and me being able to take those tidbits of information and put it in my craft, you know, it was amazing. And I feel so honored to be able to put out one album, let alone another one. You know, it's
yeah.
just, it's amazing to me. Every day I look in the mirror and I go, I can't believe you are doing that. You know?
Yeah, it is. And because over the last few years, you've met with a decent modicum of success with Breath Band before everything went down COVID wise. You were getting ready to not only finish this up in the studio, you were getting ready to hit the road. You had just gotten off the road from a pretty successful tour run, things like that. What has it been like for you to kind of go from somebody who, like we said before, with bands like Fail, things like that, and other projects that you were a part of, had modicums of local to regional success. What has it been like for you to kind of ride the crest of that into the wake of this part of the industry where you're touring and opening for bands like Tool and things like that?
Frightening, to say the least. You know,
that is the realest answer ever, dude.
Everybody wants to be a rock star and tour until a record label approaches them and says, hey, we want you to go on tour. You know, I didn't yeah. put this album out for any reason other than a release.
Sure.
You know, I was working a corporate job. I was the CEO of an organization and working 60 to 70 hours a week. And this was just my release. You know, I thought drinking scotch every night was a bad idea. So I thought I might as well hit the skins and break some guitar strings to let it out.
Sure.
And so I did. And interestingly enough, I don't know how or why, but it took off really fast. And I had these offers to tour and open and distribute my stuff. And, you know, I turn around and I'm looking at SoundScan and I'm actually selling a good amount of discs and singles. And I'm like, wait a minute, this was not supposed to happen. You know, so it's been frightening. It's been humbling. It's been gratifying. You know, I think about the days when I was in Fail and I was always trying to come up with new ideas, and you know, kind of the talk inside the rehearsal room was, oh, that's stupid. You know, I was always trying to think of all of the music even back then. So to have somebody, you know, give me money to play live and to be able to express myself, it's been really gratifying, kind of like a humbling, I told you guys, you know, I told
yeah,
you so.
Yeah.
And the other side of it is, and going back to, you know, kind of just informing people who think this is easy, you know, I had to pay people to play with me. I had to play road
yeah.
crew.
Yeah.
I had to put together all the traveling arrangements. I went from being a CEO of a company for someone else and being my own CEO and having to run a business. And, you know, getting from place to place, you know, having a bus tire blow out, having gear blow out, you know, it's not as beautiful as it seems when those musicians are standing on the edge of that stage giving you their heart.
Yeah.
You know, for every hour of play, there's 10 hours of prep.
Yep.
You know, so yep. That opened my eyes. You know, I really have a firm love and empathy for people who run clubs and arenas and put on shows and do the audio visual, because that crap's not easy, man.
No, it isn't. It isn't. And, you know, recently I actually posted, and it was really interesting to me that probably about five different people I know from totally different walks of life, like they're fans of music, but they aren't engineers, you know, like they aren't like people like me who push cases for a living and go out and set up shows and run them and stuff like that. But I posted this quote from Henry Rollins that was like, your prima donna attitude is unnecessary. Nobody wants it. Nobody at the club wants it. Nobody in the green room wants it. When the stage manager comes in and says it's time to go on stage, go on stage. Stop what you're doing.
Oh,
listen to the
man. I agree with that.
Like, it's his job. He's been there for hours getting this stage ready for you. Now it's your time. Go on there. Like, these things should be reversed. Like, he should be getting your pay.
I agree with that.
You know,
and I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one thing I learned pretty quickly as we started touring is, you know, without any of the support, there is no me.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw people labor for hours. You know, I'm sitting in a club or an arena in the back of the place having a Coca-Cola, and I'm watching all of these worker bees and worker ants get all this wonderful stuff together. And I remember thinking to myself, these people are amazing.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to what you said about being on time, because we were always on time, we got picked up for an additional, you know, leg of a tour, or there was another band that was like, man, you guys really have your stuff together.
Yeah.
Come with us. And, you know, so I think that I'm grateful that I spent so many years in corporate America, because I know how to meet deadlines. I know how to be on time. I know how to work with other people. And, you know, being in my mid-40s now, I think that had I been given this opportunity as a 20-year-old, I would have blown it.
Yep. Yep.
You know, but being older now and having that world and life experience and that humility, I think that's why it's been so successful so quick. It's just that people know when I show up, it's going to be good, you know?
And that it's go time. Like when you show up to the studio, you aren't going to show up with your buddy and your girlfriend and a 12 pack of beer and a bag of weed.
No,
you're showing up by yourself with your instruments and your show notes ready to hammer some stuff out with your engineer. Like it's and I think that you made a very cogent point a minute ago talking about how had you had this same exact opportunity in your 20s when we met, that you possibly would have blown that. Because a lot of that stuff comes down to self-discipline, accountability, you know? And I try to explain to podcasters all the time, because I'm kind of in a different world now, whereas I spent we kind of crossed paths, Daniel. Because went from corporate America back into rock and roll, and I went from rock and roll into corporate America, doing AV for corporate shows and things like that, and producing content for the same kind of thing. And, you know, to have those years behind me, now that I go out and talk to podcasters, things like that, I try to explain to them that there is a formula in rock and roll to success, even to like local success as a band or regionally. And there's a formula, and that formula is a minimum 1-to-3 ratio. For every 1 hour you spend in the studio, you got to spend, each person outside of that studio that week has to spend 3 hours working on that band, whether it's going out and putting up posters, telling people about it, like going on social media, whatever. But there's that 1-to-3 ratio. And if you're not personally accountable for it, you will fail. It will happen, like guaranteed. And it's really funny because in business, there's very much like almost the same formula where it's like, if you do this, you will at a minimum break even and keep plugging away. You know,
right.
but you gotta follow this formula, you know, and it really does come down to like, no, it's 8 a.m. Get up, get out of bed. I know you're self-employed. Get up, get out of bed.
Right.
You know,
it's about being, you know, this is going to sound silly, but I learned in corporate America, the more hassle-free your organization is, the more advocates you're going to have who want to buy your product or service.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing in music. You know, it's all about dollars and cents.
Yeah.
And I try to be as hassle-free as I can be when I, you know, give my rider to the promoter or the club. You know, I don't need a certain color Skittle in the green room. I need a chair and an outlet for my amp, you know, and what I found also, you know, and over time is keep your nut small. You know, my overhead is so small that any money we make.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And I learned that really quickly. And, you know, I've pushed really, really hard for creative control. I've pushed really, really hard for merchandise control. And I didn't get big, fancy advances. But the amount of money that I've been able to make and keep because I wasn't willing to get a bunch of money up front.
Yeah.
It's turned out in my favor. You know, I've been able to pay my crew through the entire COVID experience.
Wow.
Without any loss of revenue to them because I saved as much money as I could and kept our nut small, you know, so it's been interesting, you know, just discipline wise and really understanding the easier I am to work with, the more people want to work with me and the more employed I am.
Absolutely. You know, absolutely.
I had no business being attached to some of the tours that I was on. But because I was like, yeah, tell me what to do, man. I'm there.
Yeah.
They were like, cool, let's go, you know?
Well, and, you know, I can speak to the same thing about being on gig site. You know, three quarters of it is attitude and how you approach a situation, you know? Like, most people are like, yeah, man, I'll work with Chris. He's fun as hell to work with. Like there's never negativity spewing out of his mouth. There's always solutions to be had, you know. And you could either be the squeaky wheel or you could be the greased wheel, one of the two. But you're a wheel in the machine, man. And like to realize the fact that you're just a spoke in the wheel. You're just something helping it move along. Most people think music, 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 and they forget the other two parts. Of the phrase, which are business and industry.
Exactly.
So when you're talking about being as fluid as possible going into a studio, going in and 3 hours of studio time is 2.5 hours of recording, you know, like that's
exactly.
that's the things that a label wants to hear is that when he goes into the studio for 3 hours and we're paying $150 an hour for studio time, he's maximizing the studio time. He's not in there jacking around. He's not playing around, you know, he's not going in and just wasting sessions, which is pretty frequent. And let's get into a little bit of that for some of our musicians that are up and coming, things like that, because of course it's the dream to get a label interested in your music, you know,
absolutely,
stuff like that. But it's also a rarity, and you really do have to, like you were saying, be willing to go into the studio, front it, get your stuff done yourself, and then go out and shop it around. So how was it that you were, because like you were saying, you were able to take care of yourself and your crew and things by really thinking forward with the way that you were going about doing things. So how did you go about doing that with your label and assuring the fact that instead of advance, because of course that's what most people think about is the advance. Why would you want to miss out on the advance, Danny?
Well, the truth is I just don't like being told what to do, you know?
Yeah.
And I figured it was, you know, I've all the money and all the time, energy and effort for the, you know, first album. I did about as much research as I possibly could about where it needed to be placed, what the legal aspects were, you know, the copyrights, the sound scan, the Library of Congress, all of that good stuff. I read about as many books and websites as I possibly could to understand what I needed to do to protect myself first off. And then once I had that all down, you know, I went to Los Angeles and I greased the wheels, if you will, of a few prominent music attorneys and said, what do you have to lose by meeting with me? Heck, I'll pay for your time, you know, but just meet with me, see what I have, tell me if I'm stupid and I need to go in a different direction, or tell me it's good and let's talk. You know, it took a lot of guts. It was frightening. It was scary.
Sure.
And it's not conventional music. You know, I'm never going to be selling the same amount of records as Justin Bieber or Ariana Grande. But what they recognized is there was somebody here who was willing to just do whatever he had to do to get there.
Sure.
And I think that is inviting to my attorney. You know, I'm not going to name drop him, but, you know, he's a prominent music attorney. And he said, listen, with your attitude, with your people skills, your business acumen, we can do something with it. He goes, you'll never be a gazillionaire, but you'll be able to make a living making music. And I said, that's fair, you know.
Yep.
And then step two was consolidating what was important in my life. You know, I don't need a brand new Ferrari, but I do need a car that gets me to the grocery store. You know, so I whittled all of that stuff down and got rid of the wants and just solidified my needs. And what I found really quickly is that once you get rid of all your clutter, you know, at home, you know, business-wise, music-wise, it's able to save a couple of bucks. And I always realized that I had people supporting me and that there were people that, you know, they needed me to be responsible. So I just lived off what I needed and not what I wanted. And when COVID hit, I realized I had this pool of money that I could give to them and to keep them, you know, comfortable and not freaked out and just on my side through all of this. That way, when we come out the other side, I still have these wonderful people and crew that work for me who are now forever indebted to me in their heart because I put myself aside and I said, hey, here, we're in this together.
Yep. Yeah. And I
just thought that was really important. You
it's
know?
Extraordinarily important.
Yeah.
I mean, I know more than one person that works for touring companies, big, major touring companies. They didn't get that. They didn't get that. They didn't get that from the artists that they tour with. They didn't get that from the company that promotes the artists they tour with. Nothing like that. So to know that your close personal crew, the people that travel with you regularly, you were able to take care of. And I think the real wisdom in what you said was getting rid of the wants and only sticking with the needs. People asked me for the longest time how I was able to be an engineer full time. I was like, I stopped going out.
Yeah.
Like, stop going out to eat. Start cooking at home. Like, dude, I cooked in kitchens for years as a regular job, man. Like, long enough to be called a professional cook. I did enough, you know, like 30, 40 hours a week for 5 years. I was a professional cook. And then I went out and I engineered at night, you know? So it's like, why don't I cook at home? Why don't I do that stuff? If you stop smoking, you know, hey, pack a cigarette today. That's like $50 a week, man. That's a used microphone. You can start racking up gear real quick. You can start racking up studio time real quick, or promotion for Facebook, whatever it is that you have to do. If you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything, as Doc Brown says. So to know that. Go ahead.
Something you said earlier just kind of popped up. You know, when people get involved in music, it's usually because they love music. And then when they start playing, they want the notoriety, the fame. They want to be on stage because it's a wonderful feeling to be on stage. But what ends up happening is they realize all the work that comes with it, and they're like, it kind of sucks, and it's going to be hard, and it's going to take a while. And so they stop. And that kind of inherently weeds out all the crap, if you will, because then the pool is smaller, and you only have people in the music business who want to work hard.
Yeah, who are committed to their cause.
Right. It's not easy. You know, what I'm doing is probably the hardest thing that I've ever done, aside from raising children. It's like, it's constant. It's every day. Every morning I get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I start reading emails and you know, responding to emails and trying to figure out particular deals and planning tours. I mean, we're planning a tour right now.
Yeah.
That's not going to take place until a year from now.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, because people don't realize that's how tours work. Like, whenever I leave Vegas from a 10-day show, at the crew dinner, we're normally getting the dates for next year's show. Like,
exactly.
Hold these dates, guys. They've made the dates firm. This is when it's happening next year, and this is where it'll be happening. We'll be in touch, but hold those dates. Like, they know when the tour is over, when the next tour is starting.
Exactly.
So, to know, and it, like you're saying, it really is, it's one of those things that you have to commit full on to, and people don't realize that. People do not realize whenever they get into music, hey man, you can make art all day long. And that's one big thing that I try to do on this show, is kind of give that definition between artist and musician. To me, an artist is someone that will always make the music, despite income, despite money, doesn't matter. Musicians are people that are out on the daily plying their trade. People like my good friend and guest on the show, Tom Metz, who right now is probably teaching somebody jazz, has an appointment this evening to teach somebody some blues fingering techniques. You know, he's out playing 80s music in a band one night of the week. He's out, like, that's a musician. They are out plying their trade on the daily, like a tradesman, you know.
Right.
They are literally carrying a toolkit with them all day long. And then there's the artist who, yeah, man, they come home from work, they make their music, they hammer it out. They're making music while they're on the road, touring, playing music, you know. And it doesn't matter to them if they're eating hand to mouth. What matters to them is that they're making music.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. It's, you know, I just got lucky, really, is the bottom line.
Yeah.
I would be doing it either way.
luck and hard work. And it's definitely the fact of there is, like your lawyer said, that business acumen. And a lot of that business acumen, folks, believe it or not, is learning to trust your gut and silence the noise outside and just listen to your gut. And B, knowing when to spot opportunity. Like that is probably one of the biggest points that I think people forget and people lose track of, and not only this industry but all sides of the AV industry, Daniel, is the concept of when opportunity knocks. Like you've got to have your tools on your belt. Like you got to be wearing your tools, man. I used to literally drive around with a couple of microphones and cables and mic stands in my car, and more than once, yeah. I landed a gig with a band or something like that because I saw somebody with a broken mic stand, and I was like, hey, man, let me help you out. I'm here having some drinks and dinner. And I just hop out.
I learned that the hard way.
I'd hop out and just grab a mic stand from my trunk, and they'd be like, who the travels around with mic stands in their trunk? And then I'd give them my card and be like, Chris Jordan, I own HC Productions. I run sound for a living. Yeah. But
that actually reminds me of something, so... when we first started touring, what you're saying is 1,000% true. Mm. You know, we would open for a band, not because we were opening for the band, but we had gotten the opportunity to play at that club. But then we would, you know, the band would go, wow, you guys are really amazing, lovely to work with. Hey, we have this opening spot that we got to fill. I learned the hard way. You can't say, I'll get back to you.
Yep. Just say yes.
You have to say yes. And if you have a lot of overhead, if you have a lot of stuff that you got going on in your life, and you can't say yes on a moment's notice, you're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
You're going to be forgotten, and they're not going to ask again.
Yeah.
You know,
that's one of the phrases in our industry as engineers is you're only as good as your last gig.
Absolutely.
You know, and right now, one of the things that we've talked about on this show, one of the things that we've talked about on my Dudes and Beer podcast is the fate, the possible fate of our industry, Dan. When it comes to engineers, because you know as well as I do, most musicians out there are, and even most engineers out there are what we would call, quote, weekend warriors. You know, it's not that they aren't hardcore about it. Like I was hardcore about it, man. It blew people's minds that I was at a club until 3 a.m. and then got up and went to work at 8 every day. And was never late. Like for 5 years, I lived off 5 hours a night of sleep. I worked at a club 5 days a week.
Exactly.
And worked a day job. Like I was working 90 hours a week straight up. But that was my realm of dedication. And the problem is, like you said, you've got to have the time to do that. Right now, we're up against, and most people, at least in the corporate AV realm, I know it works frequently this way with some touring companies where you're on a 30 to 60 day pay cycle.
Yeah.
You submit your invoice and you aren't going to see that check for 30 days. Well, that was okay.
I had some 90 day experiences.
Yep. Oh, yeah. You know. Yeah. Same here, man. And that's just it. A lot of that time has passed. A lot of that time has lapsed. We're up against 6 months of this pandemic now. So people's 90 day on a last gig is gone. And if they don't see a gig in the very near future, they're going to have to get a day job. And then when the industry calls them again, will they have the time to say yes to the gig?
Or the comfort.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's just it. To be able to say yes and then go out, work for a week, and then have to wait for 30 days to get paid on that.
Right.
You know, that's going to be real hard because there comes a point, like Amy and I had just hit that point in that stride with my business and with her stuff, teaching comedy and all that kind of stuff, where the pay loop and the bill loop had just caught up with each other, where it was like we were paying everything on time or early. had money in the bank and all that. And it took a long time to get those wheels turning that way business-wise.
Absolutely.
As self-employed people. And when all this went down, the one comfort that we had was that at least we had both been, I've been freelance for the last 20 years almost. And she's been freelance for the last 6 or 7. So it's like, at least we're used to living a freelance lifestyle. At least we're used to the fact of, no, why do I need to go out? I married the person that I want to hang out with all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I think this whole situation is all about where your mindset is and where your priorities are.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't made any income for 6 months, but, you know, I had money saved, so I was okay. But I've taken this opportunity to reevaluate who I am as a person, who I am as a musician. I have a new album coming out because of all the material that has come out of me during this time. You know, I think that as a musician, it's the, I remember what Anthony Kiedis said, destruction leads to a rough road, but it also breeds creation.
Yeah.
You know, I think for me, this was the most fruitful time I've ever had because I had all this chaos going on in the world around me. And I had to be at home and I had to plan for my next move. Otherwise, when this clears, I'm dead in the water.
Yeah.
You know,
sharks got to move forward to breathe.
Right. So I'm grateful for what happened. You know, I'm not grateful that people have lost their lives over it, but I think it's all perspective. You know,
it
we
is.
Can sit around and blame each other or blame this guy or that guy for all this. It's just what happened. You know, the universe threw a wrench in our stuff. And I think you either learn from it and you appreciate it and you're grateful for it, or you piss and moan about it. And
damn,
I'm not going to piss and moan about it.
No,
you know?
No. And I mean, it's been horrible. I'm right there with you. I mean, I feel kind of the analogy I give people is the Swamp King from Monty Python. You know, where it's like, I built a castle. Everybody said I was deaf to build a castle in the swamp, but I did it anyway. And then it fell in the mud.
Right.
And then I built another castle and it fell in the mud.
Right.
Like, that's how I feel about business right now. But don't worry, son.
Right.
Someday you'll get this castle. It's the strongest one in the land.
Well, you know, from a business perspective, you know, not just the music industry, but, you know, businesses in general, those who learn to readjust and thrive during this situation are the ones that are going to come out on the other side.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
And I feel blessed that I have really smart people in my life who have guided me through all of this. And I'm super grateful that I'm going to have this really cool album coming out. You know, it's harder than the first one. I scream more than I did in the first one. The guitars are heavier. I actually am so grateful to Fender because they gave me a baritone custom Jazzmaster, two of them actually. So grateful to them because they're like, hey, here, we made these for you. See how they work. You know, so I have these 30-inch necks that I'm not used to playing on with these big, thick, you know, 52 strings on top. So the guitars are just crazy heavy, hard. Just whenever I'm listening back to the playback, I find myself like gritting my teeth because it's so heavy, you know? And I'm like, I think I've done something here, you know?
Well, and what challenges have you come across, especially right now, tracking during this crisis, all that kind of stuff? What kind of challenges have you met in the overall production of this album, and how have you kind of conquered those?
Well, the challenges are I have not been in the same room as the engineer, you know, and so I had my engineer here that I'm using you know, at the studios, but then I had my engineer who did the first album kind of as my guide, you know, and not being able to be in the same room with them, not being able to, you know, kind of ping off of that energy, if you will. Mm. That's been pretty. And the other side of it is, you know, anybody who's met me and you know this, I'm a very personal person. You know, when I like you, I like you, and I want to spend time with you and be right next to you. So not being able to have that energy has been really stifling for me. You know, it's been a mood breaker some days because I just want to sit elbow to elbow.
Yeah.
And jive with and feel how they're feeling. And
yeah,
so that's, and then the, you know, the, just the exchanging of ideas, you know, we used to be able to go out and have a pint after the recording session and kind of have a daily recap.
Yeah. Yeah. A decompression session.
Yeah. And now it's all via Zoom.
Oh.
And it's just this disconnect that I hate. You know, it's such a personal thing that I'm doing. And it's funny. It's going to sound really weird, but it's been very lonely, you know, because that energy that I vibe off with the people around me, it's not there. So I've had to kind of turn up my own and reach, you know, deep, deep down in myself into places I'm not even comfortable with and pull this crap out. So, you know, it's been stifling and really lonely, but at the same time, you know, looking at it from all angles, I think I'm a better musician for it. You know, because I've pulled out some stuff that I had no idea that I would be capable of. And, you know, so it's interesting, you know, it really is.
Yeah.
It took a lot of guts. It took a lot of, there were a lot of days that nothing went right, you know.
Well, and I'm sure it's been more than uncomfortable for you to have to step back into that engineering saddle, because once you get used to not miking an amp anymore, all that kind of stuff, and just kind of playing, you know.
Yeah, totally. You
like
know.
That, it is a, even myself, because I had so much time during COVID, I managed to get distribution for my music. And you know me, most of my stuff, I'm not a digital guy. I don't enjoy the digital process. I wish I still had like full on analog tape everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
But I got a Tascam Model 12 specifically because it operates like a big old digital four track, and I can literally just pull the SD card out, name the tracks, and then give them to somebody to master. And now at least my distribution company has stem tracks, not just a mastered MP3 and WAV file. So
it's funny. I didn't even think about it until you said it, but you know, as you can imagine, I'm very controlling when it comes to the studio. So
I know.
Being in the other room while a guy's miking something and then me hearing it play back and knowing it's not where I want it to be and having to tell him via a microphone instead of just walking in the other room and moving the damn mic, that's been really frustrating.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I'll bet.
But again, looking at it from the other angle, you know, the older I get, the more I realize I need to be more patient.
Yeah, you need to let that go anyway.
Yeah, it's been quite the growing experience. I mean, I'd say I aged 10 years in a year, you know, just by going through this process.
Wow. Yeah, and I can't imagine. I mean, I'm still pretty fortunate for the fact that the way I produce my music is pretty much the way I produced the way whenever we met each other, you know, still very much self-produced, all that kind of stuff. And that's a big part of the process that I love. But most of my music is also electronic. It's direct input. There aren't microphones involved. There aren't vocal tracks. There guitars are recorded direct, even whenever I'm using guitars. Yeah. So It's just one of those, like, I've got my synthesizers on one side of my rack and my effects on the other side, and let's go. Whereas for you, it's a little bit different.
I think the hardest part to all of this is realizing that I'm being judged on what's next, you know, I see it as a challenge, you know.
Sure.
People didn't think I could pull off the first one, and I did. And people, you know, even my record label said, why should we sign you again? And I said, because I'm just going to do a better job this time. And they're like, well, you know how uncomfortable we are with this. And I said, yeah, you're just going to have to trust me. So, you know, I have that hanging over my head.
Sure.
And, you know, so I'm expected to come out heavier and harder and, you know, more seasoned and all of this stuff. So, you know, that weighing on my shoulders has been pretty heavy. But if anything, at the end of this, I'm going to have two albums that I've put out with nobody's help.
Yeah.
You know, and that for me, you know, and then going into SoundScan and RIAA and seeing that it's actually selling, that's another amazing thing for me. You know, I can't express just how weird it is for me every day that I was able to do what I did and about to do it again.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how or why. I ask why me all the time. And my wife, who's just a lovely supporter, says, because.
Yep. I was just about to say, because of you.
You know, like, well, fair enough. That's good enough for me.
And that's what I try to explain to musicians all the time. That's what I try to explain to podcasters, is that, like as a podcaster, it's one of those, from my years in broadcast, the concept translates that you are a trusted voice. You know, when you tune into a radio show in the morning, it's because that voice is there for you. Somehow or another, you identify with that voice. It's the same way with podcasts. It's the same way with music, you know.
That's a good point.
And when something resonates with somebody, the one thing I tried to teach and tried to instill in all the jam bands that I worked with for years was, if you really want to do something for yourself, guys, what you want to do is go to all the local colleges and tell them that you will come play a Friday night for free. And just sell merch. Just sell CDs. Because the thing is, when you catch that 19 to 21 year old time frame, that is the memory that people go back to their entire life. That is the comfort music that they go back to their entire life. So if you can capture them from 19 to 25, you have a fan until they're dead.
Yeah. It's funny you bring that up, because on our last tour, I specifically asked to do a lot of college stuff.
Yeah, man.
You know, and that
college
and they told
scene,
me
college, like, radio. Damn right.
Yeah, they were like, there's no money in it. You know, they're not going to be able to pay you. And I said, but I got a trailer full of merch.
I got a trailer full of CDs and shirts and koozies and woolly caps,
you know,
to sell.
Right. These guys are having a good time, getting an education, drinking beer.
That's right.
And they just happen upon, you know, seeing us.
Yeah.
And they loved us. And they had a pocket full of money. And, you know, I have people literally having to overnight more merch because these college kids just loved the T-shirts and the koozies and all this stuff. And, you know, it goes back to what I was saying about, you know, if you want to at least get off the ground as a musician or a band or whatever, you have to be humble and you have to do what you need to do.
Yep.
And, but you have to be at the right places at the right time. And college is, oh my God, they're the best gigs that we have, because
that's right.
The energy is present. They're alive. And you leave the gig going, wow, my trailer's empty.
Yep.
I didn't get paid anything for the show, but I made more on merch than I did on the last 10 paid shows. And I have a place to crash because all of these dudes really love my music. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah. Yeah,
it's
precisely.
A wonderful situation.
That's just it. Most people do not think about all of the facets that are on that gym, all of the different ways that you can look at it, you know, and the different angles of approach that you can take, where even during a pandemic, you can still have things going on. You can still be moving forward as an artist.
Yeah.
And I think that, like you were saying, the one positive out of this is that you have gotten all of this unfettered time to work on this new album, La Renovación de Moi. And I think that that has really been one of the big catalysts in the world right now, is that people have been able to take the time to return to this kind of stuff. Even myself, dude, like, I got to relaunch Austin Hot Mods, which was a business close to my heart. It was just one of those, like, it wasn't that I didn't get emails from people. It was that I was on the road 35 weeks a year. I didn't want to come home and modify pedals for 3 days. I want to come home and hang out with my wife and kid and go out to a park, go fishing, relax, sleep.
And that's really where the basis of the album name came from, is, you know, the renovation of me.
Yeah.
You know, this time gave me the opportunity to realize that we as a society, we're just going too damn fast.
Yeah, man.
You know, we don't take the time to sit on the bench that's at the park.
Yep.
You know, we don't take the time to walk the dogs in the morning and feel the breeze in our hair. We don't take the time to have conversations. You know, I can't tell you the last time that I said hi to a millennial that they actually lifted their head and said hi back. You know, I hello, and they look at me like, did you just speak to me? Like,
yeah.
And that, it's what I've been working on for a few years personally anyway, but this whole situation forced me into hyperdrive. And the way I live my life after this album comes out is going to be, you know, leaps and bounds. Live my life before it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one of my favorite bands out there always has been, always will be, Tool. You know, their new album, there's a really pivotal song on there called Invincible. And he says, you know, I'm a warrior and I'm looking for another win. Armor up and belly in, you know. And he talks about how time is bearing down. You know, I am getting older.
Yeah.
But I think I'm at the perfect stage in my life where I'm realizing it. I'm going to do something about it. And so the downslope of my life, you know, the back half, I think is going to be positive. And that's all I want to do, is I want to connect with my music with people. I want to connect people with me. I want, if anything, I want somebody to leave one of my shows going, I feel good right now, or I learned something today. You know, that's really all that I want to do, is I want to make people smile, make people happy, make people move in a way that they wouldn't normally move comfortably. But I want people to walk away going, wow, that was a good experience, whether it's just them hearing the band and seeing us live, or sitting with me afterwards and having an espresso. You know, I want people to take what I do and go, wow, I'm glad I had an opportunity, even just for a brief moment, to have an exchange with that, you know. And that's really all I'm doing it for, is to heal myself and to heal others, you know.
Yeah. And that's just it. You know, I put myself in the realm of artists, not in any haughty way, but more in the fact of, like, hey, Toulouse-Lautrec was dead before he ever made money. Like, exactly. You remember back in the day, I used to be on the KPFT avant-garde show. And, man, I brought in like 30, 45 minutes of new music every month for 5 years straight. Like, do the math. That's an insane amount of music.
Right.
Like, and I kept writing that way for a long time, even after the show. Even now, I'm putting finishing touches on mastering on a new album that's getting ready to come out. A whole bunch of fun stuff. And it's one of those, like, I'll keep making it. I'm going to keep making it. I don't care if it sells. I'm much happier now that it's out to a wider audience and distributed. And it's cool to, like you said, go on and see some stats and go, all right, people are enjoying it. Whether or not I make money, I don't really care. I've got a successful career in other ways, you know?
Right.
It just fulfills me to hear the music in my head and be able to get it out. So when I was
talking earlier about, you know, having the opportunity to, you know, be in the same workspace with the Deftones,
yeah,
and to see how they operate and to see how they do things, one of the things that was really overwhelming for me is just how normal they are. And I think that was, you know, of all the things you can look back on your life on, you know, your first kiss, 9/11, whatever.
Sure.
I think for me, that's going to be one of mine. And they said to me directly, they said, people can smell a rat. So if you're doing this for the wrong reasons, it's not going to last.
They'll know.
And that's really, you know, talking point that I took away from those guys is be honest in your craft and do it because you love it.
Yeah.
And don't force it.
Yep. Just do what you love, and whatever is supposed to be will be.
Exactly.
Just be a cog in that machine, man. Just do what you're supposed to be doing. That's the most easy way to put it. And the fact that it came from people like Deftones in the studio, that's just beautiful to hear, that even people of that ilk, even people that far up the ladder, still think that way. That's what it's about.
That's wonderful experience.
And you know, speaking of which, we are kind of getting close to our time, things like that. I know that you still have a very busy production schedule with La Renovation de Moi right now, so with that in mind, what has been the most enjoyable part of all of this for you, and what advice would you give and upcoming musician trying to be that artist, trying to, you know, bring their art into the world?
It's going to sound very childish, but it goes back to when I was a kid and I was listening to Rage Against the Machine. You know, it's sticking it to the man, you know, the fact that I don't have to go to work every day.
Yep.
Like everybody else.
Yep.
That's a big deal, you know, even as a 44-year-old man.
Yep.
It's awesome to be able to say, forget that.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that. So that's the biggest reward for me, is I get to love what I do, you know. But, you know, to get down to brass tacks with people who want to do what I do, grow some balls. It's going to be uncomfortable, and it's going to be trying, and it's going to be taxing.
Yeah.
But if you don't want to have somebody else tell you what to do every day, knuckle up, you know, and get your 10,000 hours in, because this business does not come to you. It taunts you, actually, and says you can't get here.
Yep.
You know, so you have to work 10 times as hard as you would at any job. So that's really my advice, is decide that you want to do it first and foremost, and that you want to make it your everything.
Yeah.
And then just shut the heck up and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I could not agree with that more, especially with the 10,000 hours, mainly because a couple of seasons ago, I literally did an episode on 10,000 hours to be a professional. and I put the math on screen. And I showed that it was like you're basically doing something 25 hours a week for 5 years.
Exactly.
You're doing this as like an almost full-time job for 5 years straight. And it really does. But, man, it makes such a difference putting the time in. Put it like you're saying, don't be afraid to invest the time and don't be afraid to nut up and demand what you want. Demand what you are worth, and make your demands. Don't be afraid to say no. No has become one of my favorite words over the last decade.
And buy good gear.
Yes. Like, yes.
I can't express that enough. Like when I see these guys who are opening for us now and they have like the, Japanese version of a Telecaster and the Japanese version of a Marshall, and they wonder why it keeps going out. I'm like, dude, it's because you went cheap.
Yeah.
You know, your sound is, I play through orange cabs and Fenders because they're the best.
Yep.
You know, you can't skimp on the quality of your musician, tools, otherwise it's going to sound like it.
yeah, precisely. Well, Danny, thank you so much for taking all the time today to talk to the audience, talk about Breath Band, what it is that you do, how it is that you do it. Tell everybody where they can go to get their copy of the album Beautifully Alive, which is out in print and vinyl. For the last few years, where can they go to start hearing new stuff once it's out?
So right now you can go to www.breathband.com and we have all the links to ways you can access it through Amazon. You know, there's other platforms all over Europe. So all of the links are there on the homepage. And come first of the year, which isn't far away, our website's going to be completely redone with all the new collateral and everything for the new album. And yeah, just breathband.com. You know, if somebody's interested, just stay tuned to that. I've got a whole bunch of really cool things that are going to be happening soon from really, really amazing people that I work with. So it's going to be pretty exciting coming up. I'd say it's going to be Beautifully Alive times 10, you know, so.
Nice. And that is, just to make sure, that is still coming to us from Burnt Canary Records, correct?
Yeah. Burnt Canary Records, independent label out of Philadelphia. We're happy enough to, or graceful enough to give me another shot. So
nice.
I'm really grateful for that support. So,
well, we're grateful for their support as well. Your music is absolutely amazing. I cannot wait to hear more than the stripped down tracks that I've heard on social media. Please do hold the line while we close things out, Danny. While you're online checking out everything from Burnt Canary Records as well as breathband.com, make sure to stop on by Talking Sound Podcast. That is where you can find all the episodes. That is talkingsoundshow.com. You can also find the industry news section there, great RSS thread full of awesome stuff from Rupert Neve, Avid, all kinds of stuff, latest and greatest from manufacturers, companies in the AV industry. Also, make sure to stop on by our sponsor, podcastcadet.com. If you're into podcasting like I am, want to start up a show for yourself, friends, family, fun, church, school, business, whatever, stop on by podcastcadet.com today. Podcasting is all we do there. A to Z, soup to nuts, everything from helping you figure out your brand, branding, design, to training you on technology, one-on-one podcast consultation and audits is what we provide to everybody. Stop on by podcastcadet.com, Talking Sound 20. Talking 20 is the code that you want to use. Talking 20 is the code that you want to use on the way out the door, folks. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of your hearing, and remember... keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.